Hello, New Mexico. We're back on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I've got a fabulous guest this morning that some of you know and some of you don't. This is Ray Rivera, the new editor of the Santa Fe New Mexican. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Hollis.
I'm so glad you were able to join me.
I'm glad to be here.
So, you know, Ray and I knew each other when I worked at the Santa Fe New Mexican years ago. And yet, you know, I was trying to think how much I knew about your background. And very little comes to mind. Maybe it's my senior brain. But I thought we'd start out by telling the listeners about where you came from and how you got into journalism.
Well, you know so little because I try to stay mysterious. keep it clouded. You know, I grew up in Raton and got into journalism in a very roundabout way. I went to study in California for computer science and did that for quite a while and decided I liked reading and writing so much better. And so in a very roundabout way, and a kind of a long story, I ended up as a part-time sports writer in New Mexico in Carlsbad, quit that to come become a ski instructor or to not a ski instructor, but to work on the mountain here in Santa Fe. Wasn't a very good snow year, so I started stringing for the New Mexican, and 19 years later, or about 15 years later, here I am again.
And what year was that that you were doing that?
That was about, I started there at the New Mexican in 96, and worked till about 98, and went from there to the Salt Lake Tribune, and from there to the Seattle Times, and from there to the Washington Post, and for the last 7 years at the New York Times.
How does that happen to a boy from Raton?
Well, kind of intellectual curiosity. You get driven from one place to another, and I'm not really quite sure how it happened, but it just did. I sort of followed the story along the way.
What, when you were at the New Mexican, weren't you covering sports?
You know, I was a sports editor for a while. But I was also a news writer when I wasn't the sports editor, and I covered my last job there was the as a senior general assignment reporter. So I covered the Indian tribes, I covered wildfires, I covered any number of things.
And so how has the arc of what you covered as a reporter changed over time? When you went to Salt Lake, for example, what did you do there?
Well, at Salt Lake, I spent about a year working with another reporter on a investigation on the polygamous clans. There's a number of fundamentalist polygamous clans in Utah and throughout the Rocky Mountain West. And as part of that, they're not recognized by the church there. But as part of that, we looked at what was happening within these clans, everything from a number of financial irregularities to in one clan that had included incest in its teachings. In Salt Lake City, from there I went to the Seattle Times. I covered higher education, then went to general assignment, then spent almost a year, doing a 9-part series on a CIA and FBI investigation into a spy ring at Guantanamo Bay. So I spent a good amount of time at Guantanamo Bay and writing about this one Muslim chaplain who had really been railroaded by the United States after he'd been accused as a spy, and he never was. From there, I went to the Washington Post and did a number of things. I was only there for about 2 years before going to the New York Times. And the last 7 years at the New York Times, I spent a year in Afghanistan. Covered the Haiti earthquake. After that, very, very devastating earthquake.
Yeah.
More recently, covered the very tragic elementary school shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, which was just heartbreaking and easily the most difficult thing I've ever had to cover. This opportunity came up, and I thoroughly enjoyed my job at the New York Times, and I could have stayed there forever.
And a lot of people would say, and why didn't you?
Well, I think I'd always longed to come back west. And I would have had that opportunity with the Times, because we do have correspondents here in the West. But I'd always had I think very early on, even when I got married to my wife, I think she reminded me that I'd once said this, that if this job ever came up, running the New Mexican, I would, you know, that's a job I would take. And, you know, there are very few, I'd always kind of wanted to come back to New Mexico, but let's face it, there are not a lot of great journalism jobs here to be had. And this one, I think, was one that both, you know, gave me an opportunity to use a different part of my brain. I've been doing investigative journalism for so long, and now I get a chance to shape a broader spectrum of the news and to do it in a town I really love and in a place, a region I really love.
Right. Do you have family in the area still?
I have a brother in Albuquerque. You know, most of my family is in the West, but they're sort of scattered throughout the West now.
Spread out, yeah. Mm-hmm. You have a Hispanic surname. I'm assuming you're Hispanic in some way.
Correct.
Yeah, and do you speak Spanish?
You know, I speak Spanish like many New Mexicans of my generation speak it, which is, you know, bad Spanglish.
Yeah, I had Larry Torres, the guy who wrote Growing Up Spanglish, the column that appears in the New Mexican. He was on a couple of weeks ago, I think. And yeah, we had good fun with that Spanglish thing.
You know, it's interesting that for a minute, you know, I'm, I guess you would say, third generation New Mexican. My grandmother lived for, I mean, her family is from Mora County and was there for many, many, many generations going back who knows how long. And my grandpa came from Mexico right after the revolution. This would have been back in the 20s or so. So, you know, my parents' generation certainly spoke it. My generation, they didn't seem to care as much if we learned or not, and I'm glad to see that over the last many years there's been much more emphasis on retaining language.
How does that play into your – this is a totally a little detour here, but how does that play into your sense of identity of who you are? Do you feel like I'm a – like, you know, somebody says, well, what are you? Name the 10 things that you are. What would you say?
Well, you know, Hispanic is one of them. My proficiency in language does not determine my identity. And I'm a journalist, and I'm not sure I can go through 10 things of what I am right now. You know, I'm a husband and a father of three very, very lovely children, and a wonderful, wonderful wife, and I'm happy we're all able to join me here when we arrived. A couple of days ago.
Yeah, say a little more about your family. When did you get married?
I got married. My wife is a journalist as well. Our desks were next to each other at the Seattle Times where we met. We never dated until after she left the Seattle Times, and then we started dating and got married very soon. And soon after that, and we've been doing a lot of moving since then. Eight months after we got married, we moved to Washington when I took a job at the Post, and we had our first son, Joseph. He's now 8, and my daughter Piatt is 5, and they both started their first day today at Wood Gormley Elementary School, and my youngest daughter Sally is 2.
Wow!
And a bundle.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet. So is your wife working outside the home, or is she being able to stay home?
No, she's, you know, fortunately, we've been lucky enough that she's been able to stay and raise the kids. And when our two-year-old gets a little older, you know, she'll, I think, go back and start pursuing journalism again if, you know, not that there's that much out there in the industry anymore.
So. Yeah, and that's something I want to ask you about. You know, the venerable New York Times, we know none of us could possibly imagine it would ever die. But a lot of newspapers have died, and a lot of small newspapers have died. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to imagine how a newspaper like the New Mexican is going to survive in this environment. What do you think about that? What are your ideas?
Well, I think smaller community newspapers still have a very good chance of survival because they still represent, especially in a vibrant community like Santa Fe, because there's not many places where they're going to get their local news. And I think, you know, I think there is a strong future for them. I will say that I wouldn't have come back, and I wouldn't have, you know, I'll put it a couple of ways. There's very, very few jobs I would have left the New York Times for, because I absolutely love the New York Times, and I think that they're really setting the standard for where the industry has to go in terms of what they put on the web, how they, you know, they, just the brilliant amount of content that they produce every day. In thinking about coming and taking this job, I wouldn't have done it if I didn't have a lot of faith in the ownership. And knowing that it was family-owned and knowing that it has an owner that cares deeply about her community. So that, you know, weighed, you know, importantly in my decision to come back. You know, the New Mexican itself has gone through some hard times like every other paper over the last 4 years. And again, I don't think I would have come back if I didn't think we were over that hump and ready to start rebuilding and ready to start really reinvesting in our journalism. And that's what I really see as my central mission here, is really amping up our journalism.
How does it, what does that look like? You know, there's this, we've gone through this weird phase of, you know, the internet integrating journalism into the internet. I mean, existing newspapers, magazines, then taking and creating a website. And so the website for a very long time was always secondary to the printed publication, whatever it is. And now in many cases, I think that balance is shifting where the website is driving the journalism more. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's true, and I think that has to happen, and it's going to happen. And I think it, you know, people look at it as a, a dire sign. I think it's a real opportunity. When I was reporting in Afghanistan and in, you know, other places, you couldn't care less where your story appeared in print because nobody there read the New York Times in print. They all read it on the web. And, you know, internationally, this is where these stories are read. The New Mexican still has a very – and if you look at that site, the New York Times site, boy, they just produce – so much. You get on that site and you just don't want to leave it. There's mm-hmm. just so much there to continue to look at. The New Mexican still has a very, you know, vibrant print product, and I think it will for many years. You know, but I think that we can do a lot more on the web, and you know, that's something I want to really pursue as well, in really making our website something that you want to look at when you first wake up in the morning, and you want to look at it again at noon, you want to look at it again at 5, and each time you're going to find some new and fresh and interesting material.
Yeah, how does that change the content? How does allowing the web to drive the content change the content?
It doesn't change the content. News is news. Journalism is journalism. Narrative writing, storytelling is storytelling. And the most important thing, and I think this is where people have gone wrong over the years, is thinking that you had to do something different. If you look at the New York Times, they're doing things differently in how they present. But the content is the same. It's just great journalism. And that's what we have to produce here. It's just great journalism. You have a good story on there. People will read it. They will go to the web. They'll get the print edition, and they'll read it. What has made, I think, so many papers fail and do so poorly and be in such bad position to rebuild now is that in trying to achieve profitability, they cut out the most important part of the newspaper, which was their reporting.
You mean their content producers?
Their content producers. And, you know, that word, I just hate that word, but it's true. If you're going to have a vibrant website, if you're going to ask people to pay to go onto your website, you better have a lot of really good content there. And not just some blogger who's linking to other people's stories. I mean, somebody's got to produce those great stories that other people are going to link to.
Right.
So, you know, we have to build our capacity to produce great content.
And what about what role does good graphics play in that? Because I'm thinking about the length of an article. What if I'm reading you right, I'm hearing you say, you don't have to write a shorter article. You don't have to change the nature of the content you produce. But doing it on the web does require that you change the way you present it graphically, doesn't it?
You know, I'll let web experts debate about that. I don't think it does. You know, I think what the web does is offer you a lot of opportunities in how you present it. It doesn't mean that you have to do that. I think it offers you great capability to enhance what you're presenting with interactive graphics, with enhanced documentation, with video, with enhanced photography or more photography, all of that. So it doesn't change. It doesn't mean that you have to do all that. It doesn't change how you present the story and like that. It just anything like that. It just really creates much, much more opportunity, which is why I think why I'm so optimistic about the web is that it does give you that opportunity, and it's going to give you it gives you so much more that readers can turn to and look at when they go to your website.
How I know you've just – when did you start?
Monday. Yesterday. 2 days ago.
2 days ago.
I'm in day right. three.
So tell me all of your new ideas for how you'll change the New Mexican.
Well, I'm going to move a little deliberately. I'm not going to start, you know – this is day three for me. And, you know, I just completed just finished at the Times and had to work late into the day finishing some projects there and, you know, getting our family ready to move. So I want to do a lot more right now listening and looking and observing before I see what has to be done or what I think needs to be done or what I want to do. I have a lot of ideas, but I don't really want to go in and start talking about them right now, with the exception of the very broad statement of, you know, as I said before, I want to really enhance our content.
You've been mainly being an investigative journalist, as you said, and now you're marching into being an editor.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think you're going to make that transition?
Well, we'll see. it's going to be a challenge. I can already, you know, just day three into the job, I can already see that there's going to be a lot of administrative sort of duties and management sort of duties that are going to, I think, interfere with what my central mission is. But, you know, I'm excited for this, and I'm excited to try something different and to use a different part of my brain. It was something I actually really loved about being the sports editor here many years ago is that, if I wanted to try something new, I could try something new. And I think that's the beauty of working at a place like this where you have close access to the owner and the publisher, and I think they're very interested in experimenting and, trying new things. And if the New York Times is a big carrier that takes a lot to turn and everything like that, although they are pretty swift, you know, this is a fun speedboat that we can really do a lot of neat things with. And that's what I'm really excited about is being able to try new things the New Mexican. I think I think another reason I wanted to come back is that I just loved Rob Dean, the former editor. He really was one of my first mentors in this business. He really got me excited about it. He was the first one to really make me a news writer, and I think he managed that newspaper so wonderfully for so many years, and I think the New Mexican has a strong brand, and honestly, over the last couple of years, as their staff has fallen, it's been tough, and you know, now we want to try and get it back to this great brand that the readers here, I think, deserve.
Right. Yeah, you know, I have to agree. I of course, also worked under Rob Dean mm-hmm. for many, many years, and he was a great editor. Managing editor was his title, I think. And it's true that at a small newspaper, ironically, you can change things and do new things mm-hmm. much quicker than you can at most larger institutions, where there are just a lot more checks and balances and boxes. People get put into boxes. This is what you do, and that's mm-hmm. all you can do. And I used to say to Rob, well, I want to go write a story on so-and-so, and he'd say, great, go do it, you know?
Right.
So,
and the beauty of, you know, the ownership with the McKinney's and Robin Martin McKinney now is that when you and I worked there, it had about twice the staff of any newspaper its size.
Right.
Now it's down to about the size of the size staff of a newspaper its size, maybe, you know, somewhere around there. I haven't done all the analytics on it, but it did go to show you the real commitment they had to real quality journalism.
How many staffers are there in the newsroom now?
You know, I'm not sure I have
those
numbers directly in my head, and we weren't going to talk about this. But
right. I promised Ray I wouldn't ask those questions that somebody who'd been on the job 3 days.
Right, this
answer.
Early in the morning. So, well, when you and I worked there, I think the editorial staff was about 70 people, and it's about half that now.
Yeah,
so,
but
know,
there
maybe a little more than half.
Aren't there some people there who worked there when you were there the first time?
Quite a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking Inez Russell, the editorial editor,
editorial page editor,
uh-huh.
right? Howard Houghton, the Howard Houghton. He was now the city editor,
uh-huh.
and Deborah Villa, the magazine editor, and quite a lot of people.
A lot of those people are still there.
Yeah. So it is it has been a kind of a fun reunion.
Yeah, yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah.
And you know, I have to apologize too, because at 3 days back at high altitude, it's pretty amazing that your brain is working at all.
I don't think it's the altitude. I think it's the kids. Actually, I keep waking up on East Coast time.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been waking up at like 4 in the morning every morning,
mm.
which, you know, has been kind of good, kind of productive, but hopefully I'll get to Santa Fe time here pretty soon.
Yeah, I hope so, too. What, you know, I'm kind of curious. Do you think that the role of the community newspaper has, because of the web and because of the times, has changed? What do you see as the role of the New Mexican in this town?
I don't think it's changed. I think the only thing that has really changed is what it's, you know, how it's presented, or how, you know, I think that's the you know, but I think, if anything, perhaps it's grown more important as big, large regional newspapers have really shrunk. It has really increased the responsibility of community newspapers to veer away from, you know, kind of, nice ribbon cutting stories or something like that, to doing real watchdog journalism. And I think that's never been more important. I think that's the, like any newspaper, that's the central mission is public service and watchdog journalism.
I completely agree, because with the narrowing of the field of media in the United States in particular, one can still go to any number of national sites or television stations or whatever and get a comprehensive view or somewhat balanced view of mm-hmm. what's going on. But in your own community, and in this community in particular, there are very few places you can go mm-hmm. to get factual, reliable, useful information.
Mm-hmm.
And the New Mexican it really does a good job of that and has a long history of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good that it also has the Journal North here, you
mm-hmm.
know, because that keeps both newspapers on their toes.
Absolutely. I think, I think it would be sad to see that go, or, you know, we want a strong Santa Fe reporter as well.
Right.
Everything that, I hear a bell ringing. Is that...
You're hearing music. You're hearing music because we're getting to the end of the show, Ray.
Well, I'll just say this quickly, that,
okay.
you know, very strong competition not only, you know, it forces you to go out and be better, but it's a great way of verifying the own work that you've done. You
right.
know, if you get people, other papers following it and doing additional fact-checking.
That's right. My guest today has been Ray Rivera. He's the new editor of the Santa Fe New Mexican, a retourné from old days. And you've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Hollis Walker. I've been sitting in for Mary Charlotte this summer. This is my last guest host, but I'll probably be back a few times in the fall to sit in for her as well.